It's The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. With restaurants restricted to takeout only and supermarkets working feverishly to keep their shelves stocked, the demand for healthy, locally grown food has soared. Simon Huntley is the founder and CEO of Harvey Farms in Pittsburgh. Welcome to the program, Simon.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Simon, you actually work with more than 100 individual farms across the nation, 10 of which are in southwestern Pennsylvania, as part of community-supported agriculture. Give us an idea of what our local farms are producing that you help distribute.
Well, right now it's a little more limited with the produce season still a couple of months ahead of us, but right now we're delivering meat and cheese and some produce, some salad greens, some storage crops like potatoes and turnips and things like that. But we'll have definitely more crops as the season goes on.
Community-supported agriculture, CSAs for short, create a direct link between growers and consumers through sort of a subscription process. Usually CSAs require picking up the goods at a willing rally point, like a coffee shop, a community center with refrigerator space. So how are you getting that food directly to the customer's doorstep?
Well, we're doing home delivery, so this is definitely something that has been growing for the last, you know, 5 or 10 years, but certainly with the current COVID crisis has obviously increased more than that. So we're working with, as I said, about 10 different farms across the area, bringing that into a single point, packing that into a box, and then getting it delivered right to people's doorsteps.
Have you gotten any response so far? I know you've had a couple deliveries so far. What are the people saying?
Yeah, so our main season starts in late May when we'll start doing weekly boxes in late May through November. But we've started doing some sort of pop-up deliveries starting in March, and we just finished the third one. And really the response, especially with the current crisis, has been really overwhelming. I think we had about 120 orders in an hour last week when we opened up the order, and we had to shut it off really quickly because we want to make sure we can fulfill the orders. But yeah, the demand is huge.
Prior to this big surge, had interest in CSAs grown over, say, the last decade?
Yeah, it really had grown maybe between 2000 and 2010 or 2012. And as you said, I've been working with farms across the country. So we were seeing that the numbers were sort of dipping across the country, I think, as Amazon and Whole Foods were coming on and things like meal kit delivery, like Blue Apron and things like that. So the market was not as strong as it had been. But, you know, as I said, this crisis has really changed that and increased that demand.
So how much of an increase have you seen over the last month or so because of this crisis?
We've seen about a 200% increase in sales for our farmers. So I've never seen anything like it.
So that surprised you?
It very much surprised me. As this was starting, I wasn't sure, was this going to increase sales for us or decrease sales for us? But definitely, you know, people seem more interested in buying local food than I've seen, and I've been doing this for about 20 years.
So what do you think is driving this recent popularity specifically?
Yeah, I think it's a convergence of factors. I think people are looking to support their immune system, support their body, so they want to have the healthiest food they can. They started to think about when the grocery stores were looking a little barren, it's thinking about, well, where does my food come from? Oh, it comes from farmers. Probably one of the biggest things is that people are cooking at home right now because, as you said, all the restaurants are closed for the most part. And so if you're cooking at home, you want to have really good ingredients in your kitchen. So I think it's really this convergence of factors that's leading to this. And of course, people want home delivery. So with our program, we're able to home deliver. So that even adds more demand to the system.
And of course, the sheltering at home, I guess, has an impact.
Yeah. With people cooking at home, it's great. You know, we really need people to cook at home if you're going to buy this product. And so, yeah, people are doing that right now. And so hopefully they stick with it.
People are concerned about what they're bringing into their homes. What precautions are you taking that the food they receive at their doorstep is safe and the boxes the food is in?
Yeah. So we're, of course, washing our hands, sanitizing, using gloves as we're packing boxes, And then most importantly is that we're bringing it right to people's homes so that, you know, they're not going, they're not having to leave their house to go get it. And so it's as safe as we can make it in this time.
A lot of the farmers rely on supplying restaurants for a fair bit of their income. How are those farmers doing right now, though?
Yeah, so for farms that were relying on restaurants or wholesale customers, that is it can be a very tough time for them. And we're seeing both in the Pittsburgh area and nationally that these farms are having to switch their business model very quickly to access the sort of direct-to-consumer market. And so for those farms, this can be a very difficult time, and we see a lot of farms needing to change their business model.
Are they able to switch their business plan and be agile enough to do it quickly?
Well, one thing, the timing of this for a lot of growers in the U.S. and certainly in the Pittsburgh area, where we have a couple months before the main growing season starts. So in that way, you know, they have a little bit of time to make some changes. So I think some of the farms are going to be agile enough to make the changes, and some aren't. You know, some of the farms can sell through our Harvey Farms Pittsburgh project, the home delivery project here. So we have one Jubilee Hilltop Ranch, which was selling to lots of restaurants in the Pittsburgh area. Now they're very happy to have this market direct to consumer through our program.
And is this a pilot project here in Pittsburgh, this home delivery?
Yes, it's a pilot project. We'd like to see it grow, and then we would like to do it in other cities as well in the future if it's successful here.
What about farms around the country involved in community-supported agriculture? Any idea if they're seeing a surge in demand for their food?
Yeah, definitely. So farms that are selling direct to their customer through a CSA, definitely they're seeing that same demand increase that we're seeing here in Pittsburgh.
Once we get past this crisis, Simon, do you think the demand for delivery from farm to doorstep will continue?
I think this demand definitely will continue. I mean, it was already something that was happening in the marketplace. Whole Foods home delivery was already a huge thing before this started, and all of the, you know, DoorDash and all of these services. So this is something that's already happening in the marketplace. I think that this has accelerated that change by 100 times probably. And I don't think we're going to go back to the way it was. You know, it may be, I'm sure we'll go back a little bit, but I think that these changes are here to stay to some extent.
And finally, what's your advice to farmers regarding this sort of business model?
I think one of the things to think about is what's the long-term sustainability of this? Like, will this demand continue past this crisis? So making sure they're setting up systems on their farm and for their business that will support them into the future. And that's really what we do with my company here at Harvey is help farms have a sustainable long-term business. That's how we help farms.
Simon Huntley is the founder and CEO of Harvey Farms in Pittsburgh. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
I'm Kevin Gavin.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Megan Harris. All 600 of Pennsylvania's fine wine and good spirit stores remain closed this week, part of an effort to stem the spread of coronavirus. Online sales officially resumed April 1st, but lots of Pittsburghers say they're still struggling to get the goods. Bob Batts Jr. has been chatting with a few of those would-be buyers. He's a features editor with the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette and joins us from his home in Mount Lebanon. Welcome, Bob.
Thanks, Megan.
First off, fair is fair. What are you drinking or what's on tap for your next virtual happy hour?
Well, I'm a beer guy, as you know, and so I've been a little bit lucky because you not only can still get plentiful beer at the supermarkets and convenience stores and the distributors, the breweries are selling and delivering, so that's easy. It's spirits that are really harder to get now that the state stores have closed.
And have you been able to get through on that online marketplace?
No, I haven't. And I've been doing it not just because I've been writing about it since the middle of March, but also because I'd order a few bottles if I could, too. So once they came back online on April Fool's Day, of all days, I have been trying at different times and on different devices, and still haven't gotten through in, what, 6-7 days. But as I wrote in my first story, and I thought the state was pretty clear about it, for better or worse, the access was going to be limited, and it was going to be randomized, which is kind of an interesting concept. So it's a real matter of luck, and they aren't that store site is not opening to many people at all.
Well, and yeah, and it started out, they were limited to just several hundred transactions a day. They're a little over 1,000 now. What can people actually buy online right now, assuming you get through?
Well, yeah, I mean, right, the state is slowly ramping up what was always a very small part of its sales anyway, which was this online component. The first 5 days, they fulfilled like 4,300 orders, and people can do one order a day of up to 6 bottles. On Monday, they added 1,705 more orders onto that. So, you know, they're almost double what they did the first couple of days. What they've done these first 7 days is already 15% of all their online sales that they did last year. So their take is, you know, we're trying to ramp this up as quickly as we can. I do know that some people that are luckier than I am have gotten through. And a woman I talked to in Carnegie just sent me about a half an hour ago this triumphant picture of the boxes on her front porch, her order of 6 bottles of apple whiskey and apple vodka arrived today. So she said after she soaks it down in Lysol, she's going to open it up for her and her sister later on today.
And for those who aren't getting through, it's really frustrating for some people, right? What are you hearing from folks out in the community?
Well, there's a couple of things. The way I see it, there's a couple of things. Like, I totally understand people who want some kind of a product that they can't get. They can't necessarily understand why they can't get it. The randomization probably frustrates, you know, people more than it helps them. But there are, you know, besides being patient and understanding, there are other avenues. I talked to a woman out by Altoona who thought I could fulfill her spirits order. And she wanted a bottle of Evan Williams honey whiskey. And it has a B on the label, she told me helpfully. And she wanted some vodka for her and her husband. And she doesn't live near anything. As I told her, people can order from Pennsylvania producers, almost all of which are shipping their products. Some of them are even delivering to you or offering curbside sales. So if you live in a metropolis like Pittsburgh, there's all kinds of options for picking up whiskeys and vodkas and that kind of stuff. So I told her a little bit about that. They will ship to her, even though they won't deliver to her, so she has that option. She was talking about driving across the border to Hagerstown, Maryland, which is not technically legal, and some states are saying you can't buy our spirits unless you have our ID. That just happened in West Virginia, in Weirton's Hancock County this week. They just said, you have to have a West Virginia ID or we don't want you coming over to buy our stuff. So I think buying local and having it shipped from in-state with spirits is the way to go.
So just about a week of data so far from our state stores. You've compiled some lists of top sellers among Pennsylvanians so far. I see some classics here. There's rum, there's whiskey, there's vodka. Did any surprises catch your eye?
We had an idea to do a story about that, you know, not in pandemic time, but when the state first opened its online store, they said that we're gonna start out by just selling the 1,000 or so most popular brands, which made sense, but it made you wonder what some of those were. I just laughed at how popular the little, you know, single serving bottles of Fireball cinnamon whiskey are, because that by unit sold, that's the most popular spirit in Pennsylvania last year, and having had some not totally pleasant experience with that this past hockey season, it just made me laugh that was so high up.
And you report that there's actually a lot we can learn from the state's annual report as well, what Pittsburghers might be buying if they were still able to shop in store. I gotta say, personally, I may have contributed a bit to that overwhelming statewide popularity of the Apothic Red Blend. Were there any other notables for you? I saw a ton of Moscato.
Yeah, the wine, Pennsylvania, people joke about Pennsylvania's wine and Pennsylvania's wine taste, but hey, everybody likes what they like. There are a lot of Moscatos on that wine list. I'm looking at it here. I just got some Apothic Red at the grocery store the other day because that's what I could get. But yeah, lots of Pinot Grigio, lots of Barefoot. You know, it's a, the wine list is almost makes you think of the beach, even though we're in mostly landlocked Pennsylvania. Three Moscatos in the top 10, and some of that is different product sizes as too. It seems like Pennsylvanians like the bigger bottles of wine too, the 1.5 liter bottles.
And we should note that beer distributors are considered essential per gubernatorial order, but that hasn't helped a lot of our craft breweries. Can you imagine a future, if the shutdown continues, where this might change some buying habits for Pennsylvanians or Pittsburghers? You know, they might order their spirits or their beer or their wine online more often after this is over.
Yeah, I think they might. I mean, a lot of the breweries are, some of them have actually shut down. Some of the distributors have shut down too, as have a lot of, you know, businesses that didn't even have to, just to sort of ride this out. But the breweries that have stayed open, some of them seem to be doing quite well. I was very happy to hear that East End Brewing, one of our older and larger breweries, they managed so far to keep everybody working. And they're doing curbside contactless pickup, and they're now doing some delivery in certain neighborhoods, and they're holding their own just with that. Lots of other breweries are getting creative and doing curbside pickup, or they'll deliver. Cinderlands for a while was making fresh bread that they would deliver. So I think some of those delivery and pickup options might stick around, but you know, a lot of people, what people really miss is just going somewhere and having a beer with other people. And I think, especially with the breweries and some of the distillery tasting rooms, I think that's the part that, you know, people want to get back to almost too soon. And I was thinking myself the other day, I've been blessed to have a pretty good stock of beer thanks to my grocery shopping wife, but it just doesn't taste the same out of a can in your basement while you're working on the laptop compared to a cold pint slid over the bar with your friend sitting next to you. So I think some things might change a little bit, but I think some of the stuff that we had before, we just can't wait to get back to.
Bob Batts is a feature writer and editor for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Bob, cheers from my home office to yours.
And to you, now, how early is too early to drink when you're working at home?
I think it's just office time and wine time, coffee time and wine time, right?
All right. That sounds good. I'm going to quote you on that. And nice talking to you as always, Megan.
I'm Megan Harris.
It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Before highways and railroads crisscrossed the Commonwealth, a series of linked waterways and inclined planes brought people and goods across Pennsylvania. For our Good Question series, 90.5 WESA's Katie Blackley reports on the history of the Pennsylvania Canal.
Good Question asker Michael Gregan says he took a Pittsburgh history class and remembers seeing an aqueduct spanning the Allegheny River in an old photograph.
Apparently it was part of the canal system that bore waterborne commerce above the river. And I remember thinking that's kind of fascinating that it wouldn't be on the river. It actually went above the river.
Listener Rob Hallett tried to picture the system coming down the river before railroads existed here.
To think that there was also a canal at one time is pretty amazing.
The Pennsylvania Canal was a significant architectural achievement when it was constructed in 1826. Dave Wright with the historical group the Pennsylvania Canal Society says state lawmakers wanted the system to stretch from Philadelphia to Pittsburgh after the commercial success of the recently opened Erie Canal. The Pennsylvania Canal came into Pittsburgh from the Johnstown area, known as the Western Division. It ran alongside the Allegheny River, from where it met the Kiskaminetus near Freeport, about 30 miles north of Pittsburgh.
And then ended up coming into the river about where PNC Park is now.
Pittsburghers at the time wanted access to some of the commercial boat traffic that would be using the canal, and lobbied the Pennsylvania legislature to allot money to build a branch into downtown. Workers constructed a navigable aqueduct, which is like a bridge with water in the middle, so boats can float along.
And came in down the middle of 11th Street, and then through a tunnel where the U.S. Steel building is now. And then the tunnel continued out underneath Forbes Avenue and then underneath the Manor Building.
The Manor Building is the office building next to the Allegheny County Courthouse and the Liberty Bridge ramps. There were four canal locks here that helped boats reach the Monongahela River and the boatyard near 2nd Avenue and Ross Street. Once the system was complete, travel across the state was much faster.
So the time travel between Pittsburgh and Philadelphia was reduced from several weeks to several days.
You have a before we started to build a trail, this old railroad had been abandoned for many years.
Jack McGuire walks down Salzburg's Canal Park, about 35 miles east of Pittsburgh.
I was born and raised in Salzburg. I'm an active member of our local Salzburg Area Historical Society.
The path he's on is where the Pennsylvania Canal once passed through this community.
So with the beginning of the canal, the population in Salzburg just blossomed. They built canal boats here, and from what I've read, some of the best quality canal boats on the Western Division from Johnstown to Pittsburgh.
A lot of Pennsylvania towns developed because of their proximity to the canals. McGuire says the path was determined based on what made sense geographically, which was typically following the course of the rivers. But sometimes they ran into obstacles, like the Allegheny Mountains. So they built a combination of traditional canals, railroads, and inclined planes, similar to the two that still climb Pittsburgh's Mount Washington today.
So they had put the canal boats on those rails and pull them up the mountain where there'd be a steam engine, and they used a counterweight system that the canal boat going down the other side is helping to pull that canal boat.
But these were heavy cargo boats, and it wasn't always possible to pull them up when they were full.
Picture taking a canal boat 80 foot long and cutting it in thirds, making each third watertight, and taking them up one third at a time.
Salzburg hosts a Canal Day celebration each year, and there are still remnants of the system throughout the state. Part of the light rail T station uses canal tunnels underneath downtown Pittsburgh. The Pennsylvania Canal wasn't used much after railroad lines were built in the mid-1800s, but it was the catalyst for a number of engineering innovations at the time, and some that still shape our region today. I'm Katie Blackley, 90.5 WESA News.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. Today's show and past programs can be found at wesa.fm/confluence or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Thanks to our team, Tom Hurley, Helen Wigger, Kylie Kaczynski, and Megan Harris. Until next time, I'm Kevin Gavin. Please be safe, and I hope you have a good day of good news.